And good morning. It is KBOO Portland. 1 minute before 9 o'clock. Coming up in an hour, join us for Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. And then at 10:15, we'll have Flashpoints for you with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on Between the Covers, David Naiman will be speaking to Pulitzer Prize winner Gregory Pardlow about his book Digest, which draws from the present and the past to form an intellectual American identity. Up next, though, it is Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell is here, bringing you the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around. That is coming up next on KBOO.
Girl, KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st, from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Tonic Lounge in Portland. Next Level 3.0 is a collaboration with Flawless Shade, the House of Flora, and the House of Ada, featuring KBOO's Dina B and DJ Gila River Monster, and more DJs and performers. Costumes are highly recommended. Again, that's Next Level 3.0's party, Vogue Beach Please, on Saturday, July 1st, from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at the Tonic Lounge, 3100 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Watch a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Let's start with a climate change alert. What's the latest on the billionaire's polluted planet? Well, this from Radio Havana, Cuba, Dateline Mogadishu. Tens of thousands of children are in imminent danger of death in Somalia because of malnutrition. And that's according to a humanitarian organization there. Drought and erratic rainfall this season combined with a lack of food have led to a substantial increase in the number of children suffering from severe malnutrition, according to a statement initialed by Somalia's director for Save the Children. The name of the organization is Hassan Nursaadi. The text amounts to 20,000, saying the number of minors is that high in all areas of this African country that could die due to lack of food in the course of the coming months, plagued by conflict and danger of relaunching the famine of 6 years ago, during which 260,000 people died starving. Somalia, considered a failed state, also goes through a turbulent internal situation that includes attacks by the Islamic group Al-Shabaab. And they have the action on their coast of pirate bands, of course. Somalis also suffer from outbreaks of contagious diseases, particularly measles, acute diarrhea due to human consumption of non-potable water, and cholera. Whole crops are lost. An indeterminate number of livestock have died because of the lack of rainfall, which also plagues other countries in the Horn of Africa and is part of the complex situation that causes an indescribable human exodus. According to a forecast by UN Children's Fund, the number of Somali infants who will suffer from chronic hunger will increase this year to 1.4 million. That's 1.4 million starving children, including the more than 6 million people who will suffer from it. Now, this from Brian Kahn of Climate Central, continuing with the climate change alerts. Siberian wildfire season is off and running with multiple blazes searing the boreal forest and tundra. It's the latest example of the vast shifts happening to the forests that cover Siberia and the rest of the northern tier of the world as climate change alters the landscape. These forests are burning at a rate unheard of in at least 10,000 years due to rising temperatures. They contain vast reserves of carbon stored in trees and soil, and when they burn, they send that carbon into the atmosphere, which affects the glaciers, which causes them to melt, which worsens the lack of reflection into the atmosphere, which heats the atmosphere. The current constellation of conflagrations that has burned through 133,000 acres to the west of Lake Baikal in southern Siberia as of last week is still going. Strong winds have sent smoke spiraling hundreds of miles northeast, impacting air quality across the region. NASA's satellites captured the scene on Friday from a few different vantage points. The Aqua satellite captured the extent of thick plumes of smoke and fires dotting the region, while the Suomi NPP satellite was able to analyze the air quality. Both show the stunning breadth of impacts wildfires can have. The NPP measurements in particular show that the aerosol index, a measure of air quality, hit 19, a mark that denotes very dense smoke. According to the NASA Earth Observatory, scientists are also investigating signs that fires were burning so intensely that they altered the local weather. There's evidence pyrocumulus clouds forms. Pyrocumulus is a phenomenon that occurs when wildfires burn so hot that they cause localized convection that eventually forms clouds. The region where the fires are burning has been a hot spot on the global temperature map since November. Temperatures have been up to 7 degrees Fahrenheit above average, with some months exceeding that mark. Climate change has been driving up temperatures around the world, but the northern tier of the planet has seen temperatures rise twice as fast. And speaking for myself, this sort of thing is at the level of a news item from a country far away, but we certainly are capable of having forest fires here. And climate change affects the forests, affects crops. We haven't gotten hungry here in the United States from it yet. But for people who don't have the amount of cash and clout that we do as an imperial hub, it's getting a little more difficult to get food, and certainly that is very true in Somalia. So climate change is killing. This from Radio Havana, Cuba, Dateline Caracas. Venezuelans held a mass march and rally on Wednesday to show their support for the National Constituent Assembly and against the terrorist attacks of the opposition. Hundreds of thousands marched through the main streets of the Venezuelan capital to Miraflores Palace to protest last night's aerial attack on government buildings. A helicopter from Venezuela's Scientific, Penal, and Criminal Investigations Agency was stolen Tuesday evening, circled around the Supreme Court building, firing shots in the building and tossing four grenades, three of which exploded. The top court's building in northern Caracas was sealed off after the National Guard repelled the attack, which occurred around 5 p.m. local time. A banner was unfurled from the helicopter that read 350 Libertad, in reference to the Article 350 of the Bolivarian Constitution that opposition forces are attempting to invoke to stop the National Constituent Assembly. Now, speaking for myself, this is a country which has been subject to several known in detail CIA coup attempts, and so that's what everyone's wondering when they see a helicopter buzzing the palace, or buzzing the Supreme Court building in this case. The Minister of Communications, they write, Ernesto Villegas, denounced the armed attack, identifying Oscar Alberto Perez as the pilot who shot 15 times at the Interior Ministry, where 80 people were still at work. He then headed to the TSJ, where a session of the Constitutional Court was taking place. Perez is said to be an inspector with the CICPC and took off from La Corlata Air Base with a stolen helicopter. President Nicolas Maduro said that because of the rapid reaction to the coup attempt by Venezuelan forces, many civilian lives were saved. He said, we are going to capture the person responsible for this terrorist act, noting that the pilot works for Miguel Rodriguez Torres, who is being investigated for ties to the DEA and the CIA. Supreme Court President Michael Moreno said that damages to the building were being assessed, and the court would later release a statement. Now, regarding that, you may have heard that people from the right wing and the pro-U.S., pro-coup factions in Venezuela are speculating that it was all a stunt. That's all speculation as far as I can tell. And I would say, by contrast, if you look at the Radio Havana Cuba article, it's a basically facts. Names named. Now let's turn to the ongoing Jim Crow intimidation and mass murder of people of color in the United States, particularly of black people. Dateline Minneapolis from ABC. The mother of Philando Castile, black motorist killed by a Minnesota police officer last year, has reached a nearly $3 million settlement in his death, according to an announcement Monday by her attorneys in the Minneapolis suburb that employed the officer. The settlement will be paid to Valerie Castile, who's a trustee for her family in the case, and thus they will avoid a federal wrongful death lawsuit stemming from Philando Castile's death. The 32-year-old elementary school cafeteria worker, famous for knowing the names and the allergies of dozens and dozens of students, was killed by St. Anthony officer Geronimo Yanez during a traffic stop July 6 after Castile told the officer he was armed. Castile had a permit for his gun. The shooting gained widespread attention after the officer went absolutely berserk and clearly murdered the man. And Castile's girlfriend, who was in the car with their then 4-year-old daughter, live-streamed its gruesome aftermath on Facebook. Now turning to cop actions locally, this from Dan Hanlon and Portland Cop Watch. Headline is, Police Bureau Fails to Report Force Incidents and Pedestrian Stops. Now, Portland Cop Watch, a civilian group promoting police accountability today, accused the Portland police of underreporting information about use of force and stops of pedestrians. Under the settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice, the Bureau puts out quarterly statistics on use of force. The data for October-December 2016, released back in April, should include police uses of force at the protest against the police union contract at City Hall on October 12th, as well as multiple protests following the election in November. Remember those? Specifically, the report says there were only 7 uses of pepper spray in that quarter and 1 impact weapon, which combines batons and less lethal firearms. The data says that the 7 people pepper sprayed were 6 white males and 1 black male, identifying 5 of them as transients, that's their word. Video posted by the Oregonian, however, shows a white female clearly sprayed in the face by a PPB officer. So either this officer did not report his use of pepper spray, which is required under the crowd control and force directives, or the Bureau does not consider this a use of force. Dan writes, this is possible, as the Independent Police Review annual report stated, when an officer pushes someone in a crowd control situation, such an action could be considered an appropriate crowd control technique as described in the Police Bureau policies, end quote, and not force. So that's what they say, and the woman who was sprayed was identified as Allison Drozd when she sued the police in April. Furthermore, the Bureau admits using less lethal weapons and pepper spray during the post-election protests, noted in a tweet posted in CNN, which reads as follows, police have deployed less lethal munitions such as OC, meaning oleocapsicum pepper spray, and vapor, rubber ball distraction devices, and rubber baton rounds. And here again, these rubber ball distraction devices, I'm not sure what they're referring to. They do have rubber-coated steel rounds, which have been fired at people. That's speaking for myself. Returning to the CopWatch article, meanwhile, the Bureau released its Q1 2017 traffic and pedestrian stop data. They reinstituted their practice of including specialty units, such as the gang enforcement team, showing that 33% of people stopped by all such units combined are African-American in a city that is 6% black. So I'm going to read that last bit again. 33% of all people stopped by such units combined are African-American in a city that is 6% black. So let's see, how disproportionate is that? If it were proportionate, 6% would be stopped. And, let's see, how many times does 6 go into 33? Yeah. More than 5 times. So I'd say that's pretty Jim Crow around here by the numbers. Returning to the article, however, by combining all the rates, all the units in one, they likely watered down the gang enforcement team's previously reported rate of 38% in 2011. More disturbingly, the new report shows that the traffic division made only 15 stops of pedestrians and that none of them were African Americans. The report says only 43 pedestrians were stopped from January to March 2017, and of those, 7 were black. Portland Cop Watch suspects these numbers are seriously underreported, likely because officers have a different definition of what is a stop than what people in the community perceive. When you are asked by an officer to identify yourself, say where you're going, show identification, and be subjected to a pat down, most people would consider that a stop. At least. The Bureau, however, seems to think it is mere conversation. I mean, heck, you do that when you see your grandma, don't you? Oh, hi, Grandma. I'm going to pat you down here. You got any ID, Grandma? Where are you going, Grandma? Yeah, everybody does that. That's just a friendly conversation. Returning to the article, Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch, who conducted a review of both reports, asked, quote, do they seriously expect us to believe police only stopped 43 pedestrians and only 7 black people over a 90-day period, end quote. The Training Advisory Council, which is supposed to keep tabs on the force reports, raised some concerns about the seemingly low numbers in the quarter four data, but did not have the specific information PCW listed above, Portland Cop Watch. The compliance officer and community liaison, hired to ensure the city complies with the Department of Justice agreement, did not notice this discrepancy when double-checking the Bureau's reported uses of force for its most recent compliance and outcomes reports. The Human Rights Commission, which used to have a Community and Police Relations Committee to examine stop data, has not held any public meetings around racial profiling issues in over 15 months. For more information, contact Portland Cop Watch. Yep, they're on your side. They're at 503-236-3065. Portland Cop Watch, 503-236-3065. Continuing on the police state beat, a grand jury in Dallas just indicted Roy Oliver, the officer who killed Jordan Edwards, on aggravated assault charges in another incident of police misconduct. Just 2 weeks before Roy Oliver killed Jordan Edwards, he jumped out of his car and pulled a gun on a driver in a fender bender accident, putting the driver's life and others in danger. He was off duty when the car accident occurred, yet the officers on the scene of the car accident claimed Roy Oliver did nothing wrong. And, well, there's so much more to report on that. But 2016 was the deadliest year ever for LGBT Americans. Setting aside the 49 victims of the Pulse massacre, which I don't really like to do, but setting aside the 49 victims of the Pulse massacre in Florida, the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs still tracked a 17% increase in anti-LGBT homicides from 2015 to 2016. 2016 was the deadliest year on record for the LGBT community, according to a new report from the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs. This is by Samantha Allen. And even setting aside the 49... Okay, I already said that. The enormous tragedy at the Pulse nightclub, in concert with the daily violence and discrimination that pervades our lives as LGBTQ people, and an incendiary political climate, have created a perfect storm of fear and trauma for our communities this year. That's a quote from Melissa Brown at Kansas City Anti-Violence Project in a press release accompanying the report. Between the largely Latino victims of the Pulse shooting and the transgender women of color who were murdered last year, the group shows that LGBT people of color continue to bear the brunt of homophobic and transphobic violence in the United States. Brown, the director, is quoted saying, "We must work to dismantle the biases such as transphobia, biphobia, homophobia, and racism which undergird all of this violence, including the victims of the Pulse shooting." The NCAVP counted 77 anti-LGBT homicides in 2016, but because the sexual and gender identities of so many of the Pulse victims could not be confirmed, the anti-violence organization also tallied 28 individual anti-LGBT homicides throughout the year, up from 24 in 2015. This latter group of victims was largely transgender, 64% black, and over half were younger than 35. Quoting Sue Yacka, communications director for the New York City Anti-Violence Project, in general, she said, "I can say that in the past 5 to 7 years, homicide rates have been high or up and appear to be staying up." And speaking for myself, this is exactly what people like me, transgender people, LGBTQ, expected, considering the general bigotry that was so broadly encouraged by the candidacy of one Donald Trump. The stories of the victims, returning to the text here, including in the brief at the end of the report, are heartbreaking. For example, Maurice Jones, a 44-year-old black cisgender man living in Queens, was strangled to death and left in a burning car. because he was presumed to be LGBTQ. 32-year-old transgender woman Brandi Bledsoe was fatally shot in her Cleveland, Ohio driveway last October. Erika Tijerina, a Latina transgender woman, was fatally stabbed in her El Paso apartment in August. Many of these victims were misgendered by local media after their deaths, making it difficult for advocates to track the violent killings of transgender and gender nonconforming people. The NCAVP also tracked over 1,000 reported incidents of non-fatal anti-LGBT hate violence, such as sexual violence, physical violence, stalking, bullying, and verbal harassment through partner organizations nationwide. Most of this violence, the report notes, came from someone who was known to the survivor, including landlords, neighbors, employers, and family members. Isn't that nice? Family members. Over 40% of the group of survivors identified as gay, and 40% were cisgender. Anti-LGBT violence shows no signs of stopping in 2017, the first 60 days of the new year, as the Daily Beast previously reported. There were already 7 reported killings of transgender women, placing the year on track to be the most violent on record for the U.S. transgender community. Now in June, the Human Rights Campaign has tracked at least 12 reported killings of transgender people this year. And there's more to that report. You can find it at the Daily Beast. The concluding paragraph says, "These attacks on our community send the message that discrimination and violence against LGBTQ people is acceptable. Every one of us must call out and resist religious exemption and anti-LGBTQ public accommodation bills for the hateful legislation that they are, and advocate for increased protections for LGBTQ communities on the state and federal level," end quote. Well, and I would like to invite your calls on that topic. Do you think, for example, that if you open up a cake shop downtown, that you should be able to say, "No, I'm not going to make a cake for you because you're trans"? Because people want to have a religious exemption for that sort of thing. I mean, and if so, should it just be a Christians only, you know, sort of membership only shop? And that's a bit of a sarcasm on my point. On my part, I'll admit, because the whole problem is that a shop opens up, the public is welcome, the public comes in, and then it turns out that if you're not what those people consider normal, that is to say, right-wing evangelical Christian, then you can get burned going into that shop and be told that you are not good enough to get their services. So, does this require any further legislation, do you think? Should these shops be protected? Is that a really, and the Supreme Court's getting around to this sort of idea. In order to protect their religious freedom, their religious sense of, comfort, I guess, should they be able to kick people out? And I would warn you, before you call in, remember, this is going to cut both ways. If you have an enclave that is mostly conservatively Muslim, and you go into one of those businesses and someone like me goes in, or a cis woman goes in and doesn't have a scarf on her head, well, hey, religious freedom, kick you right out. Is that okay with you? I'm interested. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. What about this religious exemption? What about freedom of religion extending to being able to tell you what kind of cake at your wedding, or whether you even get one, or being able to keep transgender people out of bathrooms? That's being claimed as a religious right. You know, if I go to a public restroom and the area is owned by someone who hates trannies, well, there's a question. Are they allowed to, and will the Supreme Court rule that they would be allowed to say, "No, we don't have a transgender bathroom, go away"? And all you, quote, normal people who do not offend our religious sensibilities, well, you can come in and whatever you need to do. Is that right? Is that religious freedom? 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187, because I don't think it is. I think that smacks of theocracy, and I kind of don't want to live in a theocracy. And if I'm forced to live in a theocracy, I want to defy it and upset it until it backs off. Well, let's talk about the profitable activity that we engage here in the United States. I don't mean just keeping people of color down so that we white people can enjoy the higher tier of wages. I mean the international business of racist oppression. And so I'm looking at an article from The Guardian, the British publication, guardian.com. And they write, women are collapsing of heat and exhaustion while trying to make Pumas, Nikes, and other name brand shoes. The Observer and Danwatch, a Danish investigative media group, interviewed workers, unions, doctors, charities, and government officials in the country's garment industry worth $5.7 billion in 2015. The women who collapsed worked 10-hour days, six days a week, and reported feeling exhausted and hungry. Excessive heat was also an issue in the three factories, with temperatures around 100 degrees. Unlike in neighboring Vietnam, where factory temperatures must not exceed 90 degrees, Cambodia sets no limit. Though if its temperature reaches a very high level, causing difficulties for workers, employers must install fans or air conditioning. According to unions, short-term contracts, common for workers in three of the factories, were also a key source of stress and exhaustion. And they write, if workers are fainting, it should be a clear indication that you need to do something drastic. I should think so. It puts me in mind of being a worker at a post office in 1980 in Midland, Texas, and seeing flats of chickens come through, baby chicks, and they would be put out in the heat, 100-degree heat and more, on the back on their way to being shipped, and they would slowly die. And I asked if it would be okay if I just improvised a little misting air spray so that the chicks would not perish en route. They were very much against me doing that for two reasons. One, they knew that I was an anti-war faggot, and they didn't like me in anything that I did, so they threatened me with arrest if I tried to save the chicks. And second, they just felt kind of macho watching the animals die. It made them feel good somehow. I'm not sure what was going on with that. And I have often observed when I study imperialism that there is an attitude of they're just animals anyway. Actually, the first time I heard that was a higher class, a Comprador class, a Salvadoran, talking about people working in the fields from the forest. Son animales, she said. Son todos animales. Well, of course, they're not animals. And I'm describing a situation which, due to U.S. imperialism, and in order that sneakers may be brought into the United States at a tremendous profit. Notice I didn't say the wage. The wage turns to the profit. These sneakers could be made in the U.S., but then they'd have to distribute the wealth, wouldn't they? They'd have to pay, and they wouldn't make a gigantic profit on each sneaker if they made Nikes and Pumas here. I mean, that's what it's really about, making a gigantic profit and bringing it back to cis white males who control the corporation. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and Dustin's on the air.
Hey.
Hi, what's up?
Well, I had a question for you.
All right.
I was thinking about the, you know, how there's this big kind of conflict over, you know, the bakeries and everything, and the LGBTQ weddings and stuff. And I just had a question kind of flip it on the other side. Suppose I was a Christian and I wanted to hold an anti-LGBTQ event, and I was to go ask a business who was, say, a homosexual-owned catering business, should they be forced to cater my anti-LGBTQ event?
Yeah, I should think so. If you have a business, let's say I open a queercakes.com and somebody comes in and wants a cake for their event, it shouldn't be my business what the event is. And if Queer Cakes are the best in town, well, come on down and get a cake for hate.
Okay, so, yeah, because I think that's just the big question there is, like, who should be forced to do something that they don't support. I mean, like if I was pro-life and you wanted my company to cater a pro-abortion event, why should I be forced to do that?
Well, I would say because it doesn't fall within the purview of what your license allows. If you're going to have a public business, then you treat the public equally.
All righty. Well, I guess that we're going to look for the government to come down and control our lives a little more.
Well, I should say control our lives a little less, in that the government shouldn't make exceptions, especially for, you know, tax-supported organizations like religious organizations. It shouldn't be that way. Things should just simply, we should be required to treat each other equally, and even if we don't, then we should answer for acting in a bigoted way.
Good enough.
Okay, well, thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Jessica's on the air.
Hello.
Hello there. Jessica, are doctors being discriminated against if they are fundamentalist Christians and they are forced to work in a pharmacy, or is a pharmacist being discriminated against in that situation if they are required to give out birth control pills whether they want to or not? You still there, Jessica? Oh, I guess not. Okay, well, I'll put that question out to the general public. Maybe Edie would like to answer that or has some other comment. What's up, Edie?
Can you hear me, Teresa?
Yes, I can.
I'm calling because I want to respond to the sweatshop deaths. They're using sewing machines or serger machines that will use multiple threads, but even a slightest breeze from a fan or opening the door or just lifting a fabric to put on the machine can tangle the threads. And so they think the speed of getting sewing done and the saving money on a few threads is worth more than the lives of the workers. And a very simple solution is to have a clear case or cover over where the threads are turning so nothing can interfere with them, and you don't have all that lint to give people fibers in their lungs to kill them. And then you can have the fans to have people be alive and well.
Oh, we sure, need there's all kinds of relatively inexpensive solutions to that. But
So we need to make it so costly to harm or endanger, to rape, to harass, to imprison these women that they will only do what is costly, of what is humane. And in the interim, we can be doing a lot to localize our reusing, recycling clothing, sewing for each other, teaching each other how to sew. I'm not buying so much crap in the first place.
Right. Well, there's all kinds of tactics. I agree.
Yeah, we can have that solidarity of compassion and insistence. And we could even make a daily practice that you spend 20 minutes a day where you just find out what are the causes or what are the issues, and you send out your email, your make a phone call has more clout. And you just kind of do something good each day instead of just ranting or doing nothing. And I want to thank you, Teresa, for caring deeply and risking the revulsion, the pain, the sorrow, the grief, the cynicism, the despair, by bravely facing the truth and facts and bravely stating them and doing so much to make our town, our area safe. You were an important part of saving us from top off four and saving the lives of everyone in the area and democracy. So I just want you to know I'm one of those listeners who loves you dearly, and I see that there are ways that we can make constructive, positive changes. And there are lots of ways. If you're going to have a business license, you're to serve everyone. You're to be safe. You're to be safe for fires or earthquakes. You're to be having safe egress, you know, exit in the case of emergency, have your fire extinguishers. We can just simply say this is in the same line of making it safe. You're already supported by our tax dollars in having the roads, the electricity, you know, the water. And as a result, you pay back by being a decent business owner to folks. And no one is forcing you to violate your own values. You can simply go in a different business or, you know, do something else. But we cannot make it acceptable to discriminate, to oppress, to terrorize, to degrade, to dehumanize anyone, anywhere, anytime.
Well, thank you very much for those kind words and for those comments. Well, one thing that comes to mind is a tactic that has worked in the past, and that is to unfairly single out one company just for the sake of a simple and easily understood slogan and say, hey, buddy, why are you wearing those woman oppressor Pumas? And just push that out there. Just pick one company at a time, you know, after we pull down, you know, Pumas for doing that, then we can start after Nike.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Been talking about a few things here. Have been talking about oppression against transgender people. Been talking about the increased oppression now that the Trump administration has encouraged reactionary governments across the nation, local governments and state governments, to do things like pass anti-trans bathroom laws and to come up with this idea of religious exception for everything from distribution of contraceptives to the ability of bathrooms, and it just goes on. But anyway, number to call, 503-231-8187. Pear's on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Well, that is Pear. Pear Fogring.
Yeah, I got my lawyer's hat on today.
Oh, do you? Okay, what's up?
Well, do you see a difference between, say, just selling a cake and being asked to write some kind of a, you know, some words on the cake?
Okay.
You know, like one, you know, here's a horrible example. You know, the Nazis are celebrating Hitler's birthday. So okay. They come into your cake store and they want you to write a cake with an inscription, Happy Birthday, Adolf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, is that kind of trampling on your free speech, forcing you to say something that you don't want to say?
No, it's an act of intimidation from a death squad, so I would handcuff them immediately and call for backup.
But I mean, it's we can go a long way on this. I mean, but there seems to me there is a difference between just selling a product. You know, say you got a whole case full of donuts. You know, and they come in and you know they want to buy a dozen donuts. Well, you're in the public service business. But if they want you to, say you're in the sign business, do you have the right to decide what signs you will do and what signs you will not do?
Well, you shouldn't do signs that say incite a riot or mm-hmm. cause some sort of crime.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see it as like the question is it a public business or not? If it's located in a church, then they shouldn't have to do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, how offended they would be, and how much I would understand if they want to have a public business and a perfectly ordinary, and I want to emphasize, ordinary and equal member of the public, happens to be gay, happens to be transgender, bisexual, pansexual, whatever, and wants, and they're in the business of creating cakes for people getting together and celebrating it, then they have got no business saying, oh no, we only do this for, you know, people that we approve of, because the context is the people who were approved of don't notice any difference, and the people who are queer face that much more discrimination, because that gesture, that ugliness, is known by everyone who's associated with the person who asked for it, everyone who the story gets out to, all of the employees. It's an ugly act of shunning and intimidation that has no place in a public business. They should go in their church and create a bakery where only the church members can get in, or people who, you know, check a little certificate that they're, you know, holy and cisgendered and all that. Mm-hmm. Can go get a cake there. So I'm not sympathetic.
What if a racist comes in and wants some kind of a white power cake or something like that?
Well, I would say that given the fact that white power has a long-standing history of death and illegal and inappropriate incarceration. It should be possible to refuse that on the basis of not exacerbating violence, because we can say that white power has a history and a long string of people in the graveyards and swinging in little tatters from trees. So people should be able to refuse that, because that truly is dangerous and offensive.
Well, say some or say
because
some.
It's not just a matter of opinion. It's not, mm-hmm. it's. I mean, this. If you come to the cake baker or whoever or the sign maker, and ask them to participate in an act of aggression against a quarter of the population, then the answer should properly be no. You shouldn't have to participate in an evil act, an act of aggression.
I say they want to. Suppose a Trump supporter comes in and says he wants a cake saying, make America great again.
Well, then I think that would be a borderline thing, mm-hmm. Because, so much of the population agrees that, whereas it's disgusting that 60 million people threw people of color under the bus on the outside chance of getting some sort of, maverick economic change, that particular phrase is not directly associated with deaths. It's somewhat more associated with mass incarceration. It's a political campaign, so I think the argument could be made. But you want a Nazi cake? I would say no. Can't have it.
Well, let's
check and see who you killed lately.
Well, I could see this. Who knows? That might happen someday. The way this legal battle is going on, because I think I would tend to say that. Well, no one can be forced to write a statement that they don't believe in, that kind of trampling on your free speech or whatever, where just selling something that you've made already. I think there is an element of free speech involved in this, and that's why we have courts, to work out all the details.
Oh, sure. In that case, I think I would retaliate by saying, putting up a sign in my shop and my bakery, so when that person came in, I'd have a big MAGA, Make America Gay Again. And we'll see how many times they come. Maybe I'd make some cakes that say that, because usually when you have free speech, the answer to a problem that it brings up is more free speech. But I do make a distinction with the Nazis. The Nazis are a death squad just as much as ISIS. If ISIS came in and said, make us a cake saying hooray for Sharia law and off with the mm-hmm. heads of all who oppose us, well, mm-hmm. When you get around to that point, I'd be like, hey, let's check this guy and see if he's got, an explosive vest on.
Okay, well, I could see these things coming up in the future, but
surely they will. Well, I have to use common sense,
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'll take my lawyer's hat off.
Okay. Thanks for calling in, Pierre. Nice to talk to you. Okay, number to call, 503-231-8187. Have brought up several issues. I started off with climate change and started talking about this new conservative Trumpian trend of trying to say that evangelical agendas, excluding people of queer people, basically. This is all going to be okay because the First Amendment protects religion. The idea being that this is just religious speech. If you fail to treat people equally in a public business, well, that's okay if you feel it religiously. And number to call once again, 503-231-8187, and Badger's on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
So I wanted to comment on the whole religious exemption, giving churches exemption to serve members of the public based on their beliefs. And I think, that's a really slippery slope because, say I'm a pagan or I'm an atheist or I'm, I have some other belief system that strongly feels that, Christianity or any other religion is what is to blame for so much of the violence and the environmental destruction and subjugation of women and, all of these other things. And I truly believe that, it's members of these different religions who are the problem in this world. And I don't want to serve them. Do I all of a sudden have the freedom to deny service to every Christian that walks in my door? or, you know, every member of any religion who walks in my door, or
yeah,
for any other
right.
reason. I just think, where do you draw the line with these kind of things?
Well, I think you're right in that regard. It cuts both ways, and it has been a shock for some Christians to find that when they call for religious extension of religious freedom to mean that they can control the population around them, well, that applies to Islamic societies as well.
Yeah.
And there are fundamentalists in Islamic societies too. There are problems in enclaves in France and in Sweden where there's been an attempt to block out a several block area and run it entirely under Sharia law. And that's a bit exaggerated sometimes in the press. I don't want to start banging that drum, but they're just doing what the Christians would like to do, basically, by controlling their societies in that manner.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, the whole protection for religious freedom, it also protects, you know, our freedom from religion, if that's how you please, you know. Like, and I feel like if people in this country want nothing to do with the morality based on any given, you know, religious belief set, then that is also their freedom, and they shouldn't be subjected to, you know, discrimination based on what someone else, you know, thinks based on their beliefs, you know.
I quite agree.
Well, that's all I had to say, but thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in. I want to give you some more. It's 45 after right now. I want to give you some more news headlines, and continuing to ask for your calls and comments on the question, any of these topics actually, but the question of how far should religious freedom extend? Pear brought up, what would I do if a Nazi came in and wanted a Nazi cake? And I responded that I don't recognize the Nazi Party as a free speech organization, but rather as a death squad that uses white supremacy to allow it to be public and unarrested. And so I would do what I could do to defend myself from the Nazi and to investigate. Certainly I would photograph this person's face at least, and determine what I could, since he had made an indication that he was part of a violent and ongoing death squad. I would try to find out who he was currently killing or who he might have killed, rather than serve him a cake. I might serve him a cake just to follow him home, but that would be a tactic. So remember to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And Russia has dismissed a warning by the White House that the Syrian government is making so-called preparations for a new chemical attack, saying such allegations are unacceptable. President Vladimir Putin's spokesman said such threats to Syria's legitimate leaders are unacceptable. The Russian official also denounced the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump for using the phrase another chemical weapons attack. Elsewhere in his remarks, Peskov said an independent probe into an attack in April was never conducted despite Russia's calls for one, adding, that is why we do not think it is possible to lay the blame on the Syrian armed forces. In Moscow on Tuesday, a senior Russian lawmaker discussed the latest U.S. warning as a provocation, and the first deputy chairman of defense and security in the upper chamber of the Russian parliament accused Washington of preparing a new attack on positions of Syrian forces. Now, having read that, that was from Radio Havana, Cuba, using their previously communist news sources, mostly coming out of Russia. And I hate to say it, but if you read Cy Hirsch's article, which has been shoved across the world into Germany in the publication Welt am Sonntag, called Trump's Red Line, you will find that all of those accusations in the Russia in the Radio Havana, Cuba article are essentially correct. And so if I have time, I'll get into the details on that in just a minute, because I have Mark on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm back on the cake subject.
Okay.
I've had a little experience in some small businesses in Portland, and I always thought we reserve the right to serve anyone we choose. And if we don't like you, we don't have to serve you.
I think that is true, but if you
give a reason.
If you don't give a reason, sure, but if you give a reason, or if you show a pattern of discrimination, then that would fall under the scrutiny of asking whether you're violating people's equal rights.
So because of the fact that the business is public, you don't really have that right to refuse. Is that correct?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. I guess I was wrong.
Well, what do you want? I mean, what would you prefer?
Well, of course, if I was going to have a gay marriage, I would go to the gay Yellow Pages and find all the people that were into it.
That would work pretty well in Portland.
And I think if somebody came to me and said, I want you to do something that you don't want to do, like I'm a musician, I want you to sing a song you don't like, I'm going to go, no, I don't want to. You know, I have a right to say no, you know. Or to, you know, and so it goes both ways. That's what I think I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think people, if they don't like the looks of you, then you don't have to deal with them.
So you're saying that GLBTQ people have... Let's say I'm a queer living in Doofer, and I want a cake made for my wedding. I should go find a gay cake maker?
I would think so. Why not? I don't want
because there aren't any in Doofer.
Yeah.
There are no gay cake makers in Doofer.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's not right.
No, that's not right. So you should be able to go to the cake maker in Doofer who has a public business and say, I would like a cake. And if they don't like it, look, I'm not asking you to do anything illegal.
Yeah.
You have religious opinions about it? That's fine. Tell me about your religious opinions, or better yet, pray about it in church, because this ain't your business.
Wow. I didn't think of that. Huh. Well, there you go. Thank you.
Well, thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Madeline is on the air.
Hi. So I'm talking about the cakes again, also. And I was just thinking that a lot of the things, somebody brought up discrimination against Christians, and I think that there's a difference between discrimination against somebody for who they are as a person, something that they can't change that's inherent to who they are, and a choice like being a racist. And you can choose to be racist and be a terrible person, and I don't have to serve you, but you don't choose to be gay, and so I can't choose to discriminate against you. That's the difference. And I just think that that's a point that a lot of people aren't really considering in this conversation.
Well, I think that's an interesting point. I like that. And I like it that you brought it up. But I would like to add something to that. And that is there's something unspoken in these discussions. And that is the idea that a GLBTQ person is not quite legitimate, and that the revulsion that some people feel is understandable, more than understandable, natural, and should be respected. And people do feel revulsion when their culture is offended in that way. I've certainly experienced it myself time and time again. I've just retired last year as a bus driver, and daily, absolutely daily, many times a day usually, people would express either with their face or their words or their gestures just how revolted they were at me. And the effect of all that is for people to agree amongst themselves, because they see these and hear these gestures, that a person like me does not have equal standing in the society. And so these gestures of refusing a service also have an effect and add to what eventually devolves into ugly scenes with baseball bats or pistols where people get killed.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because it brings up what is an appropriate cultural quality or value and what is discrimination. And it takes into account, like, for example, female genital mutilation in other countries. We could argue that that's just their culture, but at the same time, it's repressing and brutalizing women.
As long as we realize that we were being hypocritical in doing so, because my genitals were mutilated as a child.
Right, exactly. Yes. So at what point are we saying that this is just a cultural norm and something, or a cultural value, and is something that is discriminatory? Like, how can we marry those two in our brains, you know?
Well, there were strong arguments for the couple in Central Oregon that essentially killed their kids by refusing care for, I think it was, diabetes. And the state of Oregon, after a long period of tolerance for that sort of thing, has finally put an end to it. And that community is saying, we cannot live our lives. We cannot be ourselves. Our First Amendment rights to religion are being violated. But the court has said, your First Amendment right to think and pray whatever you want does not extend to allowing your child to die of diabetes. And
right.
There's limits.
Well, the old I can't remember who said it, but your freedom extends like to as far as you can swing your fist, but as soon as it hits somebody's face, that's where your freedom ends. I think that we need to really keep that in mind, you know, with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it seems like a good rule of thumb.
Right.
Excuse me.
Anyway, that's all I had to say. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks so much for calling in. Now, I had changed the subject a little bit, which doesn't mean you can't call in about the cakes or the discrimination against of GLBTQ or irrational discrimination against people of color or any other form of the enforcement of the hegemony and the superiority of the cis white male, cis meaning comfortable in gender, white male, the normalization of the idea that cis white males are a standard instead of simply another part of the population that should be treated equally. None of this should be taken. If you are a cis white male, you should not think that I would even blink when you show up, because after all, I was observed as a cis white male most of the time before I transitioned. But more than that, I really do believe in the equality of people, and you know, so I wouldn't discriminate against you on the basis of your sexual preference and your gender comfortableness or your skin tone, and I expect the same the other direction. I seem to run into problems trying to point out the fact that we all of us live under the hegemony of cis white males, because it's rude, it's upsetting, and it's disrupting to point to the truth sometimes. And the truth is, you know, love you guys. You've set up a system and very carefully, and it is an oppressive system. And one of the most important aspects of this system is that we are not allowed to talk about it. Well, I'm going to make an exception for that here on this microphone today. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and LJ's on the air.
Hey, Teresa, how are you?
Pretty good. Nice to hear you, LJ. What's up?
Just on a little positive note, I heard on KBOO that as of July the 1st, when you go to the DMV for your driver's license or your ID, that you can register as gender neutral?
Yes, I've heard about that.
Yeah, which I think is certainly a kind of a little mini step in the right direction.
I think that it is, especially for people who feel that way, who live that way. And generally speaking, the GLBTQ liberation generally means that the whole population that is not GLBTQ gets to look at gender and look at sexuality in a new and liberating way. And I think it will help us take the blinders off. If we can move forward with this, if we can look for a really rational and egalitarian society moving forward from what is revealed from GLBTQ liberation, we'll all be better off for it.
And just one more quick statement.
Alrighty.
And I'll give somebody else a chance. Democracy and capitalism cannot exist.
Oh, yeah.
Cannot coexist.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we have to have pretend democracy, because the way it really works is the people who have the money are calling the rules. Try democracy with your boss and see how that works.
Okay, and just one more quick thing.
Yeah.
The word democracy is from the Greek.
Yes.
Domos and kritos, which means people power. So the question to my KBOO family, feeling empowered lately? Nice talking to you, Teresa. Have a great day.
Nice talking to you. Thanks for calling in. Well, getting towards the top of the hour, so again, to make my point, Cy Hirsch, who brought out Abu Ghraib, and before that brought out My Lai, the premier journalist in America, in the United States today, has been shoved by corporate, well, disgust with his truth-telling, basically. The Pulitzer-winning author and journalist is now having to publish in Germany. And so he has published very important information, which you must read, because it'll indicate to you in very good detail, in very precise journalism, that basically President Trump's war on Syria is based on lies. There was no gas attack. Cy Hirsch can prove it. Who are you going to believe, Donald Trump or Cy Hirsch? For me, that's a really easy question to answer. Well, you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Coming up, Air Cascadia at 10:15 Flashpoints. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM on our big Eiffel Tower on the hill. Other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia and around the world, you're listening to KBOO.FM. Click and donate to us, won't you, at KBOO.FM, where we go out to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. It is KBOO Portland at 1 minute before 10 o'clock on this Thursday morning. At 10:15, we've got Flashpoints for you with Dennis Bernstein. Then at 11 today, it's Between the Covers. Today, David Naiman will speak to Pulitzer Prize winner Gregory Pardlow about his book Digest, which draws from the present and past to form an intellectual American identity. That is all coming up this morning after we hear from Chris Andre with Air Cascadia. It's headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, happening June 30th through July 4th from noon to 10 p.m. Single day passes are now available, as well as the Blues Buddy Pass, the Benefactor Pass, and many other options to enjoy the blues in person. Again, that's the 30th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival benefit for the Oregon Food Bank. Saturday, June 30th through July 4th, noon to 10 p.m. at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/wbf2017.